Traditionally, psychologists focus on treating depression and anxiety, but two UBC Okanagan researchers are looking at how to make people happier. They're testing what they call a science-based program to increase well-being, and they're looking for recruits to be part of a clinical trial, so I'll sign up right now. Leslie Lutz is the director of clinical training at UBC's Okanagan Department of Psychology. She's also a registered psychologist, and she's in our studio this morning. Good morning, Professor Lutz.
Good morning, Chris. Thank you for having me.
Tell us about this program. How does it work?
Well, actually 30 years ago, the science of happiness started with Dr. Ed Diener trying to understand how come some people were happier than others. And over the last few decades, there's been fantastic research that people who are happier not only feel better and are physically happier, they're healthier, they make more money and they live longer. So from this research, it's really been all kind of done mostly with students in short-term trials, but there's been a lot of research out there. So really, Dr. Diener tapped his former student, Dr. Derek Wirtz, who is a new professor here at UBC, and myself to really take it from just bench science, kind of ideas and concepts that have been tested in the lab, to really apply it in a real-world setting with community participants over a long period of time.
So my next question comes straight from Psychology 101, which is nature or nurture?
Fantastic question, and I knew you would ask that. The answer is actually both. So the data has shown us that there is a level of biologic or genetic preset level for people of where they kind of are at with their happiness, genetically, biologically. However, the research has shown very clearly that environmentally, behaviorally, cognitively, affectively, there's things we can do in our daily lives to absolutely change that level of happiness and well-being that we have overall.
Things like what?
Things like what? So if there's two different constructs, or there's the idea of intrapersonal, these are things in out of ourselves, how we view things about ourselves, about others, mindfulness, how we go about goal setting or doing things in our daily lives. And then there's the interpersonal, things that we do with other people, such as appreciating or having gratitude for other people, pro-social behaviors such as doing things that don't benefit yourself. There is a lot of research between intrapersonal and interpersonal things that we can do that absolutely make a difference to help people improve their satisfaction with life.
Regardless of your baseline?
Regardless of your baseline. That's actually the best news of all, is that regardless of where people, their needle is to start with, we can help move that needle across time.
How are you now? You're asking for people to participate in a clinical trial, and I was sort of joking, but it sounds like a really interesting idea. Who are you looking to participate, first of all, and what do you need them to do?
Well, first of all, Chris, I would save a spot for you if you're interested to be a personal participant. But actually, this is a two-site randomized clinical trial. One is at the University of Virginia, where Ed Diener is currently at with his team of researchers. And the second site we were so fortunate is here at University of British Columbia, Okanagan. In our site, we are doing an in-person trial, so comparing in-person treatment to a waitlist control group for a period of 9 months. And at University of Virginia, they're doing an online version of the exact same program for 9 months and comparing that to waitlist control. So we are looking for 60 participants here in the Okanagan that are willing to be randomized to either this treatment arm or a waitlist comparison arm for a period of 9 months. Now, the good news is after 6 months, whoever is in that waitlist control group, we automatically roll them into the treatment. So everybody that enrolls in our program is going to get this evidence-based well-being intervention. We just want to make sure, and that's one of the limitations so far in social psychology, has been they've done all this research, but they've not done it in a randomized clinical trial setting. And that's what we're trying to prove with study one and phase one of the trial.
How do you mentioned this waitlist control group. How do you control that? Because what if people say, oh, this is a good idea, maybe I'll go do some meditation and get some more exercise and eat better? So then you've skewed your control group.
So that's a great question, and I specialize in randomized clinical trials for health behavior change, so nutrition, physical activity, and weight. And what we know is that what we do when we bring people into trials is that we just ask them, all we're asking you is to continue life as you normally do. So instead of going out and wanting to do that meditation or wanting to try those things, I say, can you hold on for 6 months for us? Because we're going to give you evidence-based and a group-based treatment intervention that we believe is going to be incredibly powerful, not just for how people feel. We're actually also one of the first studies to look at biological outcomes. We're looking at physical outcomes. We're looking at peer reports of people's happiness. So not just what you think, but what others think of how well you are doing.
Right. So when you come to measure this, how do you know that people aren't lying to you?
It's always this idea of, are people giving us what they want? And there's always that risk, but we spend a lot of time talking with people about, we're asking them to be honest and just give an honest assessment of where they're at that time. And randomized clinical controlled trials have been around for a very long time. And if you do them properly and you have the right team members to help, you know, work your participants through the program and talk about what we need to change or not change, we just want to be able to truly test whether this program, and we think it will work not just to make people feel better, but we think it could have implications on physical activity, on weight, on blood pressure, that we believe that we're looking at the whole gamut. So we're looking at this intervention to see what biological, psychological, and social outcomes can come from this evidence-based. All the components are evidence-based, but it's never been tested, all of these constructs together in a comprehensive intervention in a group-based setting.
What do we know about what motivates people to retain behavior over time?
So actually, that is probably the biggest challenge as someone who specializes in weight management. I have the Healthy Weight Service at UBC that we have started and have worked with over 100 participants so far this year. Making a change or going on a diet for 4 weeks and doing that prescribed juice diet or the home delivery food is easy to do for 3-4 weeks, even 10 weeks. But maintaining behavior long-term as a lifestyle change is hard, but we do know now through research that we've been doing. I myself have had over $3 million in funding for the health behavior change research. And what we know is that people who know how to goal set and how to set realistic small goals that are relative to what they're currently doing in their life are more successful. So it's actually a skill. Learning how to set goals in your daily life for things that you do want actually can make a difference. So for example, if Chris, you say, I'm not a morning person, well, which I know you are because you're here.
Not by nature, though.
Okay, so if you're not a morning person, if you said to me, I'm going to go and I'm going to exercise every day this morning, you know, at 4 a.m., I would tell you you're setting yourself up for failure. So what we do is get to know our participants to understand who they are, what their values are, what their beliefs are, what type of person they are, to help them set goals that actually set them up for success. And that's probably, I would tell you, 75% of reasons why people don't successfully change those behaviors is because they just try to have it as a trick or a fix, or they try a prescribed thing. And it's actually got to go relative to what you believe and what your life is like, that we believe, and based on the science in my weight management area, has been successful to say it can really make a difference.
Professor Lutz, fascinating work. Thanks very much for coming in this morning.
Thanks so much for having me.